From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Recent Johns Hopkins research suggests the physical activity of 19-year-olds is on par with that of 60-year-olds. The study's senior author, Vadim Zapunikov, discusses the ramifications of such a sedentary lifestyle. And Julie Lincoln, senior fitness director at the YMCA of Central Maryland, talks about innovative programs that motivate kids to get up and move.
Is it still going to be a hard sell? Yeah, probably. Compared to going home and playing video games? Absolutely. But at some point, the body starts to crave exercise, and that's what we have to get them to. And once it starts craving it, you won't be able to keep them out of the gym.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Accumulating screen time hours, working at a computer, hunched over a smartphone, playing video games, all that plays a large part in the growing inactivity of the American lifestyle. So much that recent research from the Johns Hopkins University School of Public Health found the physical activity of a 19-year-old is on par with that of a 60-year-old. Later in the show, we'll meet a fitness director from the YMCA of Central Maryland to hear about innovative programming to help motivate children and teens to get up and move. Joining us now to fill in details regarding the surprisingly sedentary teen lifestyle and talk about some of its ramifications is co-author of the study, Vadim Zapunikov, assistant professor in the Department of Biostatistics at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you.
First, tell us, who was part of this study? How many people? What ages?
Yes, so essentially this study involved roughly 12,000 subjects, which is representative of the entire U.S. population. So ages starting from 6 years old to all the way to 85 has been present.
And you looked at them as one big group?
Or? Yes, so we essentially look at the not just specific age group, but we look all over the entire lifespan. So essentially how physical activity smoothly change across the lifespan from 6 to 85.
And how did you track their physical activity?
So we use so-called research-grade devices, accelerometers, and this is a particular brand which is very often used in the large epidemiological studies. It's called Actigraph, and it allows researchers to access raw data, and this is one of the big advantages that you don't deal with some proprietary algorithms and you actually have a full access and full control of the data.
But it's an activity tracker that each of these 12,000 people was wearing. So this isn't them reporting, I ran for an hour this morning.
Right. This is a primary advantage of using accelerometers, which is provide you objective way to assess physical activity. And as you said, this is in contrast to the self-reported levels of physical activity, which people sometimes could exaggerate or actually not necessarily could really place how much time they exercise, you know, during the week. So this allows you to estimate amounts of time spent in sedentary lifestyle in doing light and vigorous physical activity. So, for example, light physical activity is when you just walk to your office, and vigorous physical activity where you go to a gym and exercise.
And what did you find?
So what we found, we actually have multiple findings, but the most interesting and probably the most novel is actually where we compared physical activity levels in the adolescent and actually compared them what the levels of to the physical activity levels of the elderly people. So what we found that 19 years old actually have sedentary levels, which is very similar to the sedentary levels in people who's much older, who's in 60s. So this is one of the kind of most interesting findings.
Yeah, so in other words, even kids are somewhat more active than teenagers.
That's for sure. So what we did, we actually split the whole lifespan into specific age groups where, you know, people are comparable. So, for example, 6 to 10 years old, definitely the most active among all of us. And because probably children even younger, even more physically active, but we just didn't have data to assess. And the idea was to see how physical activity changes across the lifespan. So what we saw a few trends. So the primary trend was that starting from 6 years old, the physical activity levels goes down and kind of reached its low around 19. And then it kind of bounced back and goes up a little bit and pretty much stays flat till around like 50s. And then starting from 50s, it slowly goes down.
That bounce back in the early 20s was a surprise too, right?
Yes, that's for sure. I think it's primarily because, you know, the school is behind and the people in the young adulthood probably we change lifestyle, get families and kids and full-time jobs. So this is definitely helps with stabilizing the amount of time we can spend going to gym and exercising and also being less sedentary, you know, because if you have kids, you're definitely not going to stay sedentary.
Well, one of the things you could track with this data was the time of day that people were active and how that changed. Tell me about that.
That's probably one of the most interesting aspects which you can extract from the raw data. What is interesting is that the time of the day when different age groups are active are very different across different ages. So, for example, the primary window of opportunity for children to be physically active is actually late afternoon. And it's primarily related to the fact that during morning hours, we sit in the classroom and just doesn't really have a time to exercise and the opportunity to exercise. And a completely different trend observed in the elderly. So, for example, when I'm talking about elderly, I mean 60 plus, it's essentially early morning hours and time before the noon when people are active, and after that we become highly sedentary. So, as you can see, over the lifespan, the time window for physical activity really changes. And it's primarily related to, again, the social constraints.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Kast, speaking with Vadim Zipunikov, assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're talking about his research findings that suggest an alarmingly sedentary teen lifestyle in the U.S. What impact does a sedentary lifestyle have on overall health?
When we talk about children, this is primarily has been related to the high obesity levels. But there was other links in terms of, you know, higher depression levels, for example.
So both obesity and depression can result from lack of activity.
Correct.
You've also done research, and I know that wasn't the point of this research, about the connection between the sleep that young people get. And
right.
Both of those things.
Right. So the thing is that right now there is a lot of interest in terms of relating sleep deprivation, especially in adolescence, and low levels of physical activity. And what has been shown and what people are really interested in, what really drives this sleep deprivation in the same age group where we found the low levels of physical activity. And I personally got interested in this question because I think we're interrelated, but this question is still open. You know, what really drives? Is it the sleep deprivation drives low levels of physical activity, or the low levels of physical activity contribute to the sleep deprivation? But sleep deprivation has been linked to many things. Higher depression levels, obesity as well. So sleep deprivation. So this is where we couldn't really separate what really contributes to the obesity levels. Is it sleep deprivation by itself, or is it low levels of physical activity? Because we quite often comes together. And what we're trying to understand is what's exactly the contribution of each of them. Sleep deprivation separately from being physical activity, but probably they're interrelated. And this is what I'm currently really interested in.
Do you have a working hypothesis?
Working hypothesis is essentially that if you don't get enough sleep, you don't have enough energy, right? So that's one of the contributors. And another thing is just the opportunity to be physically active, because in the classroom, you're mostly sedentary. And in the late afternoon, for example, energy levels during the day, they follow circadian pattern. So when you get up, you might have low levels of energy, but it's known that they're going to slowly raise. And in 3 hours after you get up, they're going to be higher than early in the morning. And then during the late afternoon, we're going to go down. So if late afternoon is the time when you actually get the first chance to exercise, your energy level doesn't really align well with this, and you actually want to be kind of sedentary. So this is kind of creates this vicious cycle.
Well, getting back to your activity tracker study, the activity study, do the results suggest actions that would counter the findings about sedentary teens?
Yes, yeah, so that's a good question, but I think our study kind of report what we observe in the population, but it's completely separate question of how to intervene into this. But I can tell you a little bit about how people plan to address this. So,
Please. So
for example, making sure that, you know, physical activity and physical exercise classes are available during the school week. That's really important, because a lot of schools these days, they actually try to reduce the hours because the curriculum becomes really expanded with the science classes and et cetera. And I think this is where we should make sure that there are right balance, so the children get opportunity to exercise. But also what's really important is because there is definitely some contribution of the sleep deprivation, we have to think about moving and delaying the start of the school day. So right now there is a lot of effort to make sure that the classes and the school doesn't start before 8:30 or even 9. But there are even sometimes very radical suggestions to create a so-called two-track system. So when children who get up really early could come to school at 8, and children who get up much later could come to school at 10, at 11. But I think we're not there yet.
The raw activity tracker data that you analyzed was at least a decade old. Do you think new data would show the same trends?
Yeah, I think the trends will be even stronger, and I think that we might actually observe higher levels of sedentary time in the same age groups. And I think it's primarily because there is this trend of overusing smartphones and mobile devices by children. So I think it's definitely one of the contributors. But we definitely have to see data before we could really make any claims.
That data is about to be released when?
So the data is supposed to be released at the end of this year, but the end of this year happening soon. So I don't know if it's going to be released at the end of this year. So probably sometime next year.
Well, I'm sure you'll have something to say about it. Thank you for walking us through this.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Vadim Zipunikov is assistant professor in the Department of Biostatistics at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He is co-author of a study that suggests the average American at 19 years old is as sedentary as a 60-year-old. We'll have a link to information about the study at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. After a short break, we'll talk to a fitness director to learn about exercise programs targeting teens in innovative ways. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Kass. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Kast. We're talking today about research that suggests an alarmingly sedentary teen lifestyle. We spoke earlier with Vadim Zipunikov, assistant professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He co-authored a study that suggests the average 19-year-old is as sedentary as a 60-year-old in the U.S. Joining us now from the YMCA of Central Maryland is Julie Lincoln, senior director of fitness. For more than a decade, she's been educating adults and kids about health and wellness. Welcome to On the Record, Julie.
Thank you.
Regular physical activity is about more than just weight management. What do people, especially young people, get from making physical activity a routine part of their day?
Well, so many benefits, to include better sleep, better mood, and definitely exchange of hormones that we need to happen for our bodies to get stronger and stronger as we grow. Without that hormonal exchange that occurs when we sweat, unfortunately, our body doesn't continue to get stronger and stronger. It gets the message that the status quo is okay.
So wait a minute. The act of perspiring is actually part of the benefits of the exercise?
Absolutely. Sweat
is beautiful. I thought
it
was just something we put up with on the side.
No, in fact, the more you sweat, the better, to be honest with you. It's a great detoxing of the body. It allows for our hormonal exchanges, I was mentioning earlier, to really equalize. And we need to exercise and to stress the body to let it know that this is the environment I live in. I have to be this strong to participate in this environment. And those messages are sent through activity. Without activity, the body gets the message that being sedentary is okay, and therefore being weaker, not being quite as strong, is okay as well.
So all that takes place in exercise.
It does. It's so much more than weight control. It really is. And for the same hormones that control mood are also controlled with exercise, they're actually affected by exercise. And that is that when we work out and we get rid of those toxins that I was talking about earlier, we also release endorphins. And endorphins are what makes us feel good every day. And without that release of endorphins, obviously we're not getting the full benefits of what we could be getting if we just put a little effort behind our activities.
Well, I was concluding from my conversation with Vadim Sapunikov that maybe just moving, just, you know, strolling, just getting up out of the chair was enough. But you're saying, no, you got to sweat enough, and you'll do yourself good if you actually push yourself enough to release endorphins.
We were built to run from cheetahs. Now we're not doing so anymore, but our body doesn't know that. We are wired from many, many, many thousands of years ago, and our wiring hasn't changed. So we keep thinking that it's okay if we adapt and use machines and use smartphones and use all these wonderful, beautiful things that make our lives convenient. But unfortunately, by doing so, we're depriving our natural being, what we're meant to do, which is to be physical, to be active, to be strong. And we're taking away from our health and our longevity and the quality of life by not participating at the level that we're expected to in nature.
Let me pick up on some of what you said about the screens. I mean, computers and smartphones take a lot of the blame for the sedentary lifestyle for kids. What is the seduction, do you think?
Instant gratification. When you play a game, it's, I always like to remind me my childhood, we had light brights. And you'd sit there for hours and push those little pegs in. And at the end of it, you had this amazing design that you created and you earned. Kids now push two buttons and their entire screen is lit up and changing and moving. And they're just getting so much feedback, whereas we had to actually create our feedback. They're not playing kick the can in the streets anymore either. They're staying in home in front of the screens, participating with themselves or two or three other people that are, you know, connected, maybe on the neighborhood block. But they're generally not playing outside anymore and running. Their attention is being taken away from that kind of fun.
But you're saying there's an instant gratification to the screen life.
Absolutely.
It's very hard for the real world to compete with.
I think it's addictive. You know, it's much more entertaining, saying, than going for a walk in the park. I mean, you and I appreciate nature because we were raised going out in nature and doing just that.
We're slow.
But these kids are just, it's coming at them so quickly, and it's so seductive, just the energy of it.
So how do you counter something so powerful?
In my opinion, you give them fun, innovative ways to exercise. You make it about community and having fun and being social again. Because right now we are seeing that those screens are taking away from social interaction, right? In-person interaction. And we all know the importance of that, and we also know the joy of it. So I believe that if you create physical programming that the kids are coming together and participating in, you're going to create community, and that community is going to support itself, make it fun, and then become a habit for these kids. Most of the kids that are in this predicament that we're speaking of, the sedentary predicament, aren't athletes, right? We all know that those kids are getting plenty of exercise. But these are the kids
kids who go out for a sport.
Yeah. But those are the children we're talking about. Instead, we're talking about the ones that don't necessarily love competition. Doesn't mean they won't love exercise, but they don't love competition. So we need to reach out to them and find programming that's inviting, non-competitive, non-aggressive, but allows them to, as I said, break a sweat and get the needed hormonal exchanges as they grow.
So give me an example.
We invite them to Zumba classes at the Y. Zumba is just a dance-style cardio class. They can come with their parents starting at the age of 11. We invite them to participate in yoga. Same thing, body weight, stretching, but also strengthening. And up to the age of 16, we invite them to come to any class that doesn't involve physical weight training. Body weight training, yes, but no additional weight-bearing exercise they're allowed to participate in. At 16, they can take any class they'd like within our facility.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass, speaking with Julie Lincoln, YMCA of Central Maryland's Senior Director of Fitness, about programming to motivate children and teens to be more physically active. So tell me more about what the Y is doing to get kids involved. How do you reach out and get kids to come?
We have a number of programs. We offer cardio for kids, and that's 8-year-old to 13 years of age. We teach them how to safely use the equipment. We do have to have a height requirement because the manufacturers do require that they be a certain height. But as long as they make that height requirement, they can go out and use any of our cardio equipment that they like. And then in addition, we have Teen Quest. And Teen Quest is from 13 to 15. And that is a little more in depth, where we actually put them through strength training and teach them how to safely use the machines and set each machine up for them. The range of motion is controlled, so it's not unsafe for their joints, like some will suggest that free weight is. So we don't allow free weights until the age of 16, but 13 to 15 can take our Teen Quest. Then we have a leaders club, and our leaders club is new to the Y in this area, but actually nationally, it's a big program. And what that is our young teens come in and they learn a service component along with a 45-minute exercise component every week. So they're serving the community, they're out in the community doing all kinds of volunteer work. But then when they're with us in the facility, they're learning about a spin class or a yoga class, and they're taking it with a group of their peers. And that's a program from 13 to 18. It's a great one. And in addition, we've just recently started Boxmaster for teens. And Boxmaster is a wonderful, wonderful small group personal training component. And what it is a mannequin, essentially, with numbers. And you beat this mannequin with gloves on, and you do it to different rhythms and calls. So we'll call out a number sequence, and then you'll follow it. So it may be, you know, 3-2-3-2-1, and that's an undercut, uppercut, crosscut. And the mind is working, so you're using your mental facility, but you're also really getting a high cardio exercise out of it, and the compaction is causing plyometrics for the upper body, which are hard to get, and the teens love it because they look cool. I mean, they're wearing wrapped-up gloves, you know, they look strong, and they get to actually hit something. And believe it or not, that can be so invigorating, just letting all that stress and angst out on a dummy, and they walk out of there feeling like $1 million.
I can imagine. Tell me how it's working.
Beautifully. For the Y, we started our new program with the introduction from the 8 to the 13, 13 to the 15, the two programs on June 13th. And we've done over...
This past June.
Yep. Yeah. Now, we had a program prior, but this is a lot more user-friendly to get people to really get their kids in, get them trained, get going with them. And we're, you know, inviting them to do it now. And we've put over 1,700 kids in the association in that age frame through the training. That's massive for just starting off. Now, we're a large organization. The Towson Y that I personally work at has 20,000 members, and we've done 450. So it's an amazing amount of interest by the parents, because they don't want to drop the child off and stay and play. They want their child to be working out next to them or with them.
Stay and play is basically childcare.
Stay and play is our childcare, yes. And it does go to age 10. But parents know that children between the ages of about 7 don't want to spend time with their little siblings. They don't want to spend time in a room where there's a child crying. They want to be out and doing something physical, or they want to be doing something a little more mature with older kids. And this gives them that opportunity to do so.
Are there plans to add to it?
Always. You know, the Y is, that's what we're looking to do. Exercise should be a daily habit, just like brushing your teeth. That's how we see it. So children need to learn young, and it needs to be a part of their routine, and it become a habit for them so that they carry that into adulthood. So we're looking for ways to make the family feel comfortable working out together, coming in together, maybe going off in different directions. We want it to be a family affair.
How long, in your experience, these young people that you say have gone through this training in the last 4 months, how long will it take them before they feel that, I like it better when I've been exercising, I want to do this? How long does that habit take to form?
12 weeks, in my opinion. And I'm going to say my opinion, there is some science that backs that up. You and I, we lose an inch around the waist, and we are motivated. That, to us, is enough to get us up at 5:30 in the morning and hit that spin class again. But to a 14 or 15-year-old who really wants to be in front of his video games, it has to be something much more empowering, much more of a a true change. So I would say 12 weeks until they really feel that heightened energy, that awakeness, that awareness, and that they're getting deeper sleep, that they'll appreciate it. And is it still going to be a hard sell? Yeah, probably, compared to going home and playing video games. Absolutely. But at some point, the body starts to crave exercise, and that's what we have to get them to. And once it starts craving it, you won't be able to keep them out of the gym.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Julie Lincoln, Senior Director of Fitness for the YMCA of Central Maryland. She's talking about programming aimed at children and teens to encourage more regular physical activity. We spoke earlier with Vadim Zapunikov, Assistant Professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He talked about recent research on alarming rates of sedentary lifestyles among teens. We have a link to information about that study and to programs of the YMCA at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.